to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, September 3rd, 2015. It's about 2:20 UTC. I haven't given the time in the last few shows I've recognized. I don't know why. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello. Hello.
And Yvonne is in North Carolina this week. He keeps moving around.
Yes. Yeah. I try to do that on a regular basis.
He mentioned to me that he's actually not that far from where I lived as a child. I lived there from... I lived there for a few months before I was two. Then I lived there from when I was about five to sixth grade. Yeah. And then I was there again for seventh grade, and then I was gone for good. But I lived in Durham, North Carolina all those years. Most of that time in one particular apartment there that, I can still see it in my head. I can still see the neighborhood in my head. It's been a long time since I was, in seventh grade, which was the last time I lived there.
Well, the thing is that I told Sam that I'm doing a Goodwill tour of places he's lived at.
Yeah, because you were in Virginia a few weeks ago with me, and but you got close to where I lived in Virginia, but not quite.
What do you mean? I drove to the house.
Oh, you lived in the place in D.C. Yes. But I also lived in Virginia for a little while.
You lived in Frederick as well,
and right? Maryland. Yeah, but we didn't really go to Maryland.
We didn't go to Frederick, but I did go to the house in D.C. I did go to that.
There you go. And I lived there for a little while. You're right. Fun stuff. You have to go to Madison, Wisconsin, or Pittsburgh, or Mozambique.
Well, I was in Pittsburgh last year. Okay, yeah. So that counts. Okay, I went that last October, so I covered that. So I've been to Pittsburgh, Northern Virginia. I went to I'm now in Raleigh. So I will say that Madison, Wisconsin, I could probably figure out how to get on a business trip to Madison, Wisconsin. I don't know about Mozambique.
So I will give you, if you allow me just a second. Of course my computer decides to be slow and give little pinwheels. You know, while this is doing this, I will say our main topics for today. We're going to talk a little bit about
Alzheimer's.
What? Oh, yes.
My Alzheimer's.
Yvonne does apparently have early onset Alzheimer's, because when he suggested topics for the show, he kept suggesting things we talked about last week.
And I know that I made this list since last week, so therefore I don't know what the hell. I don't know.
Anyway.
And here's the worst thing. I'm usually the guy that remembers shit, and Sam can't remember a damn thing.
Our main topics. Yvonne had a little Twitter exchange with Kevin Drum about... Kevin Drum had posted about why he hated Apple, and it basically came down to Apple controlling the experience and all kinds of things you can't customize, you can't do, especially on the iPhone, less so on the Mac, but especially on iOS, where you can't do... as Yvonne makes all kinds of loud noises.
I didn't do anything!
You're moving all over the place, making all kinds of noise.
I'm not doing anything.
Whatever. Anyway, it's basically the whole customization versus lockdown experience that is the fundamental debate between iOS and Android, and in previous decades between Mac and Windows and all kinds of things. We'll talk a little bit about that stuff. Second main topic is going to be the refugee crisis in Europe, where all kinds of people, especially from Syria, but also from Libya, also from a few other places, conflict zones, just trying to get to Europe. And Europe struggling with this, and all of the stuff related to that. And then we'll do a segment, of course, on election stuff. We've got some updates from Trump. We've got some updates from Clinton. We've got Perry, whoever. What's Perry's first?
Rick.
Rick. I knew someone Kevin named Perry. Kevin Perry in high school or something. or at one of my jobs. I don't know where the hell. Anyway, I think I knew two of them. Anyway, doesn't matter. Rick Perry, and we've, you know, miscellaneous things with all the election stuff. But I was going to say, my full list of places that I have lived, because this has been quite a few, like, because I moved around a bunch. I like to say, like, the longest I've ever lived anywhere and without moving was, looks like, 8 years. And so, and that was Durham, North Carolina. So anyway, I was born in Madison, Wisconsin. Then I moved to Durham, North Carolina. Then I moved to the town of Bagamoyo in Tanzania. Then the town of Rabaue in Mozambique. Then Durham, North Carolina again. That's when I was there for 8 years. Then Indianapolis, Indiana. Then Washington, D.C. Then Durham, North Carolina again. Then Frederick, Maryland. Then Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Then Washington, D.C. again. Then Alexandria, Virginia. Then Plainsboro, New Jersey. Then Yardley, Pennsylvania. Then Melbourne, Florida. Then Palm Bay, Florida. Then Bellevue, Washington. And then finally Everett, Washington, where I am today.
Well, I will say this. The only place I don't think I have been, I don't think I've been in Pennsylvania, but I have not been to Yardley. I don't think I have been. Maybe close, but not Yardley. I have not been to the Washington state,
yeah,
and not to Africa, but I've been to every other one of the places that you've been to.
Well, there you go. Congratulations. So there
you go. Thank you.
Now, to properly chase me, you have to live in every one of those places.
Not likely to happen.
Not likely. Not likely.
I'll buy an RV, maybe. There you go. Does that count?
Nice, that would be a nice trip.
If I get an RV and just visit the places, does that count?
Yeah, sure. That would be a nice road trip, especially if you included the two places in Africa in that road trip.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll put the RV on a ship.
There you go. That sounds like fun.
That sounds like not a bad idea, actually. You know, there you go.
Anyway, enough about that. Before we get into the real topics, I did want to mention one other thing, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, you know this already. I'm planning on upgrading my phone, finally. When the new ones come out, they'll be announced next week on September 9th. They're going to announce them, and then they'll probably be available a couple weeks later if the normal pattern follows. And I've been, you know, hanging on to this old iPhone 5.
It's not even a 5S, it's a 5.
I upgraded the battery on the thing a few months ago to make it so that it could still live just a few months longer. And then earlier this week, I go and I think it's in my pocket, but it turns out it was in a pile of stuff I was carrying, and I shoved the pile of stuff into my car, and the phone comes tumbling out onto the pavement of my driveway.
Ouch.
and smashes the corner. Now, normally I keep my I always have my phones in a case, but this time I have it in a battery case specifically, and this battery case has a bottom part and a top part that snap together. Well, the top part of the battery case, which is just, you know, was not where the battery is, sort of
just smacked into the pavement.
Well, no, it was gone, because like I had stopped putting the top part on because the top part had sort of cracked.
Right, you didn't need it.
And it wasn't part of the battery.
So it wasn't there, so it hit without it.
So it hit the actual phone instead of the case. So this is something for everybody to keep in mind. Half a case does not provide as much protection as a whole case.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so anyway, the corner smashed, and I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. 10 more freaking days. 10 more days. Or is it actually 11 or something at the time?
Well, it's, yeah.
And, you know, that's all I needed this stupid thing to last. So, you know, I have always, I'll admit it. I have looked down on people who have their phone with a cracked screen and keep using it. And, you know, either they tape it shut or they just ignore it and just use it anyway with the cracked screen. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding. Go to the freaking store and get that fixed, you know?
But you only got 10 days to go.
I put tape on the damn thing, and I'm running around with my phone with a cracked screen with tape all over it, holding it together.
Well, look, when I landed here in Raleigh, okay, which, by the way, the airport is really nice. Okay, so I will say that I actually
must have upgraded it a few times since I lived there when I was 7.
I will tell you that I will probably rank it as the nicest airport I've been to in the United States. Okay? Oh, nice. That good. Okay? So I go there, and I go to the bathroom to wash my hands. Use the bathroom, and I'm washing my hands. And I see this cracked phone that all – there was a guy, like, standing by me. And all of a sudden, after he leaves, I see this cracked phone just sitting on top of the sink. And I'm like, I wonder if that's broke. Oh, my God, the guy left his phone. But it took me a couple of seconds to register the fact that this guy had left his phone. So I just had to go out in the hallway and, like, yell, like, just say, yo, who left his phone? And actually, the guy, like, realized it immediately, like, turned around. It was like, oh, my God, just thank you. So I did save a guy from losing his phone at the airport, just leaving it there. Probably wouldn't have realized it until it was way too late. He was out of security or something. Not being able to get back. So I felt good about that. That's a good thing.
There are two things I remember about the Raleigh-Durham airport from when I was a kid. And, of course, this has all undoubtedly changed since then. One is, of course, this was the days before, you know, all the security and stuff. So there was a viewing place. There was, like, a little staircase you could go up to an observation deck. And it was really small, it was really dingy, but you could go up to this little observation deck and watch the planes and stuff. And I remember going up there many times with my parents. I don't even know if every time there was, like, somebody actually coming or going on a flight. I think sometimes we just went to the damn airport to go to the observation lounge and look at the planes.
We used to do that when I was a kid, too.
So. And I remember that was a lot of fun. And also, I remember in the main sort of waiting lounge, they had all these chairs that were of, like, the kind where there were a whole bunch of chairs attached to each other. But they had these little 5-inch or less black and white TVs that you could stick a quarter into and watch for 15 minutes.
Wow. Cool.
And broadcast only, of course. It was just whatever they could get, you know? So I remember, like, on a couple of occasions when we were waiting to pick somebody up or waiting for a flight or whatever, you know, getting my parents to give me a couple quarters that I would put into the TVs to watch TV for a few minutes.
Cool. I love that. I remember those. Those are cool.
And that is not something you would see in 2015.
Nope. Those are all gone, unfortunately.
Yeah, but it was cool. Anyway, I think that's enough small talk. Let's jump off. We'll take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll jump into letting Yvonne rant about people customizing and not customizing and their electronics. And then, you know, after that, Europe refugees, and then the election. Back after this.
Celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, here we are.
Well, why am I ranting about this? It's just reality. Look, so we're talking about, so Sam was reading a story. I don't know. I don't even remember, since my Alzheimer's onset, I don't remember the total gist of the story. Can you refresh us on this?
Yes, I can refresh this. excuse me. Let's see. Did you retweet the thing or?
I don't remember.
Anyway, it was Kevin Drum. And I'll get the exact thing up in just a second. But his basic point was that he hated Apple because, you know, in his words, Apple hated him. Okay, yeah. So the article is Apple Hates Me, I Hate Them Right Back by Kevin Drum, published in Mother Jones on August 30th. Okay. And he starts off by talking about how in the past, Apple has not allowed ad blocking software, but now they're going to. But, you know, basically he's like, but they're not really doing this because they want to help you as a consumer. They're doing it as like a battle with Google kind of thing. But his more general point is, he summarizes it as, here's the lesson. Apple is happy to allow users more control over their devices as long as it also happens to benefit Apple. If it doesn't, though, then tough. This is why I generally loathe Apple. Obviously, all companies are run in their own self-interest, but Apple carries this to absurd lengths. Say what you will about Microsoft, but they've never pulled this kind of crap on their customers. If I buy a Windows machine, I can pretty much do what I want to with it. And what he's talking about is the fact, and I think this is much more true on iOS than it is on Macs, but specifically, he's talking about, you know, iOS has this whole controlled environment. You can only get things through the App Store, unless you jailbreak, of course. There's a very limited set of customization options. You can't just arbitrarily change almost anything about it. You know, Apple has a very clear idea about, this is how you should use your device. These are the things that are okay. These are the things that are not okay. And by buying an Apple device, you're essentially buying into many of those assumptions. Whereas, for instance, on Android, there are all kinds of variants of Android with all kinds of different options. There are all kinds of ways to download software. It's not just the Google Play Store. You can get it from all kinds of other places. You can sideload things. You can do this. You can do that. And there are options all over the place to customize almost anything. You want a different skin on your phone? Not a big deal. You want to put you want to put the clock in a different place on the device? There's software you can do to do that. There's almost anything is customizable. And he also references access to the file system. So for instance, on an iPhone, you don't have direct access to the file system of the device. The apps are sort of all segregated. They only have their own little areas. So you can't just like arbitrarily go look at a file and open it with whatever you want. Now, obviously, if you're a highly technical user, there are ways to do all of this stuff anyway. There are ways to jailbreak. There are ways to get to the file system. But for the average user, all of that stuff is hidden. And that's a lot of what he's bitching about.
Yes, and my point in retort to him was that surveys have shown historically that 95% of users of PCs and like smartphones do not change default settings. And the only fucking reason that is good is for a smart minority or for a whole bunch of fucking people to go and hack into your phone and fuck with your shit, which is the reason why Microsoft, he says, yes, Microsoft never covered me from doing that. And yes, and that's what made Windows XP one of the most insecure fucking operating systems in the history of mankind. And so his argument is just for the benefit of a tiny minority when it fucks everybody else. They're nightmares to support. The people that do the mods that he does, when they do them, when you call and try to get your fucking thing fixed, here's the problem. You fucked with your shit. You go and you try to get support. You can't figure out what's going on. And then you realize, well, of course I can't. He fucked with the OS. I can't figure out what the hell he fucked up. There's no way to fix this fucking thing. Oh, I'm sorry. You have to reinstall everything back to the basic OS because I can't figure out what the hell you fucked up with the shit you wanted to mess with. And that's the problem. I get it. He wants control over his device. Fine. You buy your Android OS, you fuck with it. But then by doing that, what you're doing is you're opening yourself to a hell of a lot more risk. And what you're doing is you're making a device that only you yourself can support. Okay? And you know what? Most companies, most individuals can't give a flying fuck about it. Okay? They don't care. 95% of people don't modify them. You know what? If you don't want 95% of – if 95% of them don't modify them, why leave it open to modification? Lock it down. Fuck it. You want the shit that you modify? Then you go fucking figure it out on your own. Let everybody else have a safe device.
Well, and that's why, honestly, like I said, there, you know, you can jailbreak Apple devices, and then that opens up all kinds of additional things that normal people don't have. But of course, there's a constant like back and forth between Apple and the jailbreakers, because every time somebody jailbreaks it, Apple's like, oh, there's a security flaw, I'm going to close that. Right. And they go back and forth on that. And like you said, there is Android, there are alternatives out there, and it very much is a sort of, you know, if that stuff is important to you, then he's right. Apple's not the device for him. And, you know, maybe Apple does hate him. And maybe he is right to hate them back. Because that's important to him.
I'm sorry. He thinks Apple hates him? He's a fucking moron. No. Apple's trying to do what is safe for most people. And what they're trying to do is give an experience that most people will be able to get that's easily supportable. Okay? So he doesn't want that. That's fine. But, you know, don't fucking get pissed off at somebody that's trying to give, you know, try to give somebody to something that works. You know, it's the same thing. It's not just with computers. But look, when you try to customize all sorts of shit, this is the kind of crap you get into. I was going with somebody over like used cars. Okay. Used car. You take a car that's used, and the guy that kept it in the original factory settings, and you get, you know, didn't modify it, didn't fuck around with it, you buy that used car 10 years later. Usually that car is pretty reliable. It's pretty good to support. I was shopping for used cars for a relative of mine, trying to help him get one. Every car that we found modified that was the same year as another one, oh my God, what a nightmare. They did every aftermarket thing, and all those aftermarket things were causing one problem after another, after another, after another. Because they weren't built for it, they were whatever, or something that somebody jury-rigged. Nobody can later figure out how to fix it. It's impossible to fix. It's just a clusterfuck. And it's like, it's the same thing with a computer. You get something that somebody just fucking jury-rigged and changed everything, it's impossible for you to maintain. You get something that really came pretty much close to what the factory fresh was, you can take care of it and whatever. And I get it that some people want to do it, but unfortunately, look, most users are not that smart to be able to support their own devices.
Well, and we've mentioned before, I think both of us, you know, if you went back 15 years or more, we were modifying all kinds of crap on our machines.
And
we
absolutely.
Were all kinds of beta software, and we were, like, I remember on the old, on OS 9 on the Mac, there were all kinds of extensions you could get to add all kinds of things and change the appearance and do this and do that. And I was using all of those things.
I did too. I will admit it. I did the same thing.
And I was really...
But I'm too old. I'm too tired to do that shit anymore.
Yeah, like every time I'd see some new cool thing that modified the operating system in some way that I thought was, oh, that's neat functionality. That would be cool. I'd add it. And so I'd end up with like 20 or 30 of these things going. And yes, there were problems that were occasionally caused by that. And, you know, okay, I got some new interesting functionality out of it before anybody added it directly to the operating system. But yeah, like you, I'm like, I don't have time for that anymore. And maybe
I don't have time for this.
You know,
shit.
And
no.
There, and if I was still a person who wanted to tinker and wanted to experiment and wanted to mess with that stuff, maybe I wouldn't, you know, want the iOS device. You know, but, and I think, like I said, it is really different from on the Mac because they don't lock down as much. Like the default experience is fairly straightforward, but if you want to get into the command line and do all kinds of stuff and download third-party software that hasn't been approved, there's nothing stopping you. But on iOS, that is harder. But like, you know, if I was really into that stuff today, maybe this isn't the set of devices that I would be thinking about. But yeah, I'm at a point where I want it to mostly work. And I know like there are some parts of Apple stuff that don't just work anymore. And Apple has been criticized for some quality issues, but I want it to, as much as possible, just work. I don't want to tinker with a lot of stuff. And where I do want to mess with stuff, I want to very carefully select that and go down and do that. But I'm not going to spend a lot of time optimizing X, Y, or Z. And I'm quite happy for somebody like Apple to sort of say, you know, we've done a lot of thought, we've done a lot of testing, it works pretty well this way, and there you go. Now, every once in a while, I am frustrated by the fact that there's some customization that I wish Apple had some option in their software, and they just don't allow it because it's an expert-level feature. But even then, almost always, there are third parties that you can go in and get, you know, the more complicated thing if you want to. I don't know. I understand the sort of visceral, I want to control my device, I want full control over my device mindset. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, from a philosophical point of view, I agree with you. I want to control my device fully. But from a practical day-to-day perspective, I don't want to think about that shit.
I know. It's one of those things that sounds sexy. You know, it's like I was telling, in theory, but then in practice, it just brings quite a lot of other problems. And I'm just like, fuck it. No. So I'd just rather take the compromise, just take the more controlled environment. I don't want the problems.
Yeah. I mean, unless I have something very specific that I want to do that's not allowed, then I'll start thinking about what the alternatives are. But until I hit that wall, I'm not worried about it.
Yep. Yep. Okay,
and I think, by the way, you know, if you look at the success here, you'll find that, look, there is a market for both types of approaches.
That's exactly right. There is a market for both approaches. So,
and that's why we have both approaches, and that's the, you know, the wonder of choice. So, like, if you are...
And that's why I take it, like, he says, Apple hates me. No, Apple doesn't hate you. Not at all.
You're just not Apple's target audience.
You're just not Apple's target audience. That's it. Period.
And there's something else out there for you.
Yes. If there was no other thing out there, then that's another story. But, you know, there is something out there. And, oh, by the way, that really, in terms of volume of units, is bigger than Apple.
Right. Yeah, so, we've talked about before, Apple may be making all the money, but in terms of units, you know, Android's kicking their ass.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, I you're right. It would be, I would think very, very differently about this if Apple had a 99% market share and it was difficult to find alternatives.
And they are not remotely close to that percentage. So, you know, I'm like, you know, come on, give me a break. I mean, you have your option, give me a break.
I mean, even in Windows' biggest days, what they were at, like, what, 95% or something?
Over 90%, yes.
And you know, Macs had like 5% of the market, you know, yes. And even then, it's like, okay, if you want the alternative, Apple's out there.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. Time for a break. We'll take a break, and then we'll turn a little bit more serious. We'll talk about Europe and refugees and, you know, things like that. Back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, so...
Refugees. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, so what's been happening at a high level is that there are a lot of bad things going on in a lot of places that are Europe-adjacent. There's, of course, the conflict in Syria. There's the conflict in Iraq. There's things going on in Libya and other places in North Africa. There are a lot of places where it is just a very, very bad place to live right now. Because there's, you know, not only is there economic insecurity, which has always sort of been there, but right now it's magnified by war. So you've got desperate people trying to get out of those places to safer places. There are various land routes, but one of the things that's been making the news quite a bit lately are people trying to go by sea.
Yes.
And so there are all kinds of traffickers who essentially make a business out of taking, you know, essentially, but I'm not going to, you know, it's not even that they're rickety old boats, although some of them are, but they drastically overfill these things. So they'll take vessels that aren't up to the task at all and load them over full and try to get these people across the Mediterranean to Greece or Italy or some of these other places where basically, you know, once they get to land, those governments feel a little bit more obligation of, well, oh, crap. OK, we got to help. We got to do something. Right. And well, there are significant issues about how to distribute them through Europe. And a lot of these countries where people are arriving are protesting that they're having to bear most of the burden, and countries sort of further to the northwest aren't taking a lot of these guys, et cetera. And today there was a specific case. It was actually Turkey, I believe, where a 3-year-old boy who, along with his family, was trying to escape Syria, basically washed up drowned on one of the beaches in Turkey. Pictures of this were taken and were splashed all over the news, all over social media. I saw it several times. It's like, you know, the close up of, you know, the dead 3-year-old in the surf. And people were like, you know, freaking out about it and saying, oh, my God. You know, and on the one hand, OK, visceral image. And this is one of the areas where, by the way, I think it's
he's 3 years old, really?
three years old. And by the way, his brother and his mother also drowned. There were also pictures today of, you know, him and his family in happier times a few years ago before Syria went to hell. I mean, not that many years ago. He's only three, but, right. you know, pictures of him happy with stuffed animals with his family, the whole thing. I support people actually showing pictures of this because it sort of brings things home. On the other hand, almost a couple times a week, we're getting stories of boats sinking and people drowning and things like that. And you know, it somehow doesn't get the same attention because you don't have the picture. But look, more to the point, and one thing I retweeted earlier today is someone, and I don't even know who it was, someone with a Middle Eastern name said... Oh, here is the quote. Sad that a Syrian child drowned on the way to Europe. If he were shredded to bits by an airstrike in Aleppo,
nobody would just ignore him. I know.
You know, because, of course, all of these people are trying to escape and taking very dangerous water routes to try to get to Europe because it's more dangerous where they are. Even worse things are happening there.
Oh, God, I just saw that picture. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I know. We wouldn't have given a shit if we hadn't seen a picture. Like, very bizarre.
Exactly. And
I know.
And, you know, for those of us, I have a 5-year-old, you have a 3-year-old, it immediately reminds you of your own kid.
Yes.
But, you know...
Oh, God, I'm closing that page. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. But...
I think, look... The problem is, and I know that we're paying much attention, it's really awful to see that visual image, okay? But unfortunately, this happens a lot, all the time.
Yeah.
It's not just there. You know, in the last 15 years, I mean, we had, like, especially when the situation in Haiti was, like, very desperate during, like, in a couple of times... Look, there were like massive boats like this of refugees heading towards Florida or Puerto Rico when I used to live in Puerto Rico, and there were many times that boats like overloaded like this capsized and many many people died trying to escape like oppression and other things. And it's, you know, we've had like these, like also a lot of the border controls where they have trucks of like people that just died recently.
Yeah.
In Europe that were found. I can't remember if it was in what country it was exactly. This week that they found a truck like with many people dead.
Yeah, so
this has happened in the U.S.
50 people. Yeah,
and this has happened in the U.S. with people coming in from like Central America, South America, and so forth, coming through the border with Mexico. The world that we live in is not a perfect world by any stretch of the imagination. There's a lot of people living in quite a lot of suffering. Now, as we've talked in a couple of times, the actual number of people in war and mayhem as they have been is actually lower now than it's been in some time. But still, anyway, the suffering of those people is terrible. Unfortunately.
And specifically talking about Syria for a second, there was another thing that came out, and I don't have the article handy for this one, but that mapped out, you know, of the total population of Syria from, you know, right before this conflict started, more than 50% of them at this point have either been killed, internally displaced, or are now external refugees.
I know.
And one of the things though that I thought when I was looking at this situation, because you've also got this week their trains in Budapest full of refugees that they're holding there that are trying to get to Germany, but Germany may or may not let them in, and so they're being held in Budapest, and Hungary let them in but now wants to let them go further, and there are all these questions. And I look, you know, we've had so many conversations about, you know, Syria, and is there anything that we can do to help the situation in Syria? Because there's a big conflict there, and, you know, we're going to arm the rebels. Is that going to help a damn thing? Are we going to bomb Assad?
And that's the problem. On the other end is that in a lot of these conflicts, unfortunately, as there aren't a lot of good things that we can do.
But here's the thing that I realized. Like, all of those kinds of military intervention things are actually almost 100% guaranteed to make it worse. However, yeah. What's the one thing that we can do? We can help these damn people who escape.
Yeah.
We can do hell of a lot better.
I know we can do a hell of a lot better. I mean,
because right now, like, all of Europe is sort of going, you know, we'll try to help, but we don't want to help too many, and we don't want to get overloaded. And so they're trying to get there, and then they're getting stuck, and then they're, you know, there are camps in various places, and they're trying to get to, like, Germany, and Germany's not letting them in. And Europe is all arguing about, well, how many refugees does each country have to take, and blah, 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 blah.
But this goes back to this whole immigration thing, like in the U.S. everybody.
And the same argument, and I don't see us jumping up and down and saying, hey, we'll take a bunch of them.
But we have, historically, but we should.
Here's the thing. You know, with these kinds of conflicts, you know, there should be, like, you know, all of the countries that aren't involved in the issue should come to some sort of agreement on, you know, okay, the people who actually managed to escape that hellhole, let's figure out how we can distribute them, how we can collectively take these people and help them. And, you know, some of them will go to Canada, some of them will go to the U.S., some of them will go to Japan, whatever. And, you know, help however we can. Like, that compared to, like, making a massive investment in, like, war, actually taking these people and helping resettle them in various places where they can, you know,
But I gotta be honest, these people, listen, I'm sorry, these people are moving out of desperation. Reality is that you say that, but the reality is, do you really think those people want to take everything and leave their homeland?
Well, no, they don't. That's the point. Like, the people who actually do have made the decision that they have to.
I think the point is, what I'm trying to make is, I know that I say at the same time that a lot of these military actions that we take are make it worse. But the question is, because if you go and you do a massive pushback, so they're not being bombed out of where the fuck they live, right? Does that not make it better than them having to be displaced and not leave their home?
No, no.
They probably didn't want to leave in the first place.
If we could wave a magic wand and bring peace to the Middle East.
Yeah, I know.
By God, of course that's better.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But like, whenever anybody talk about these options, like, should we do this? Should we do that? Should we do this? Should we do that? Almost every single one of those options ends up with more dead people, more injured people, more people displaced.
So rather than do any of that kind of stuff,
you know,
honestly, if it were me, I'd fucking take as many refugees as we can take.
Well, I mean, I would.
If it were up to me.
And, you know, a lot of these people, by the way, you know, people complain about like, immigrants coming to take welfare and stuff like that. You know, many of these people who are displaced in this way, you know, are highly educated professionals. I mean, not all of them, of course, but certainly a decent number of them, you know, and, you know, could undoubtedly make a significant positive contribution to wherever they ended up.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not suggesting that we say tomorrow, like, hey, anybody in Syria who wants to come, come on over. But we could do a hell of a lot better.
We could do a hell of a lot more than what we're doing overall. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I'm convinced in the end, it's actually cheaper.
I do agree.
Certainly than decades of military intervention and other options that we could be talking about.
Yeah, I know. We'd rather spend a couple $100 billion bombing the shit out of them instead of spending a couple of billion to like handle a few displaced freaking migrants.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Anyway, I mean, it all just makes me mad because it's like, you know, and of course, the reality is lots of these people are turned back. They're, you know, not allowed to get there. If they catch them on the open Mediterranean, they send them back. You know, it's just the policies are not sort of consistent and well thought out and really humanitarian. It's very much centered around, you know, we want to minimize how many foreigners come into our country. And that's not just an American thing. It's all over Europe. And, you know, whereas it seems like in some of these situations, the right thing to do would be to welcome these people with open arms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. With that, let's take another break. And we'll actually go to a lighter subject. We'll talk about the American elections. Back after this.
Facebook, Facebook, Facebook!
Hey, do you want to help support Curmudgeon's Corner? Well, right now, the best way is through Facebook. If you haven't already liked us on Facebook and you actually, well, like us, then go search for Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook and like our page. It will help you see when we announce new episodes, and it'll help us reach more new people too. If you like a particular episode, like our episode announcement post too, or share it with your friends. All of this helps spread the word about our podcast to more people who might like it as well. And of course, we love having a conversation with all of you listeners, so please use Facebook to leave comments on the shows, give us suggestions, or anything else like that. It's always great to hear from you. So, if you want to help the show, use Facebook. Or forget all of that and just send us money.
Okay, we are back. It's time for the U.S. presidential election again. So there are a couple of things here. So one, I guess this is not directly related to the election, but it's like one of those things where you expect it to filter into the election anytime now. Obama visited Alaska and is officially renaming Mount McKinley as Denali. And of course, you've got like some outrage coming on about this. Oh, I can't believe you're renaming it. Now, honestly, I thought it had been renamed years ago.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, because I've heard the Denali name over and over and over again in recent years and barely ever heard McKinley anymore. So I thought this had already happened like a decade ago.
Well, I had no idea about this whole controversy regarding it. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big nothing for the most part. But it's fascinating to see again. And it's like the same kind of, you know, jingoistic, you know, hey, it was named after a president and now you're naming it after, you know, some Native American name.
Well, that was apparently the original name,
which was the original name. Yes. And it's like, really, who does this really matter to? I mean, honestly, to me, it's like, okay, call it whatever the hell you want. You know, it doesn't really matter to me. And if a lot of people are made happy by returning it to its native name, okay. And, you know, I don't get it. But apparently some people are upset about it. You know, I guess a lot of William McKinley fans out there.
Yeah, I want to meet them, I guess. I mean, I was just like, that was a big ado about nothing. Other than a whole bunch of people in Ohio, apparently.
Yeah, a bunch of people in Ohio are upset. And was it a parody, or did Trump actually promise to name it back as soon as he's president?
Oh, I'm sure he did. Let's see. I don't know. I did not see that.
One of those things where at this point, like, you see somebody tweeting about something like that, and it's like, they could be making fun of Trump with that, or Trump might have actually said it. I can't tell the difference.
I mean, let's see.
And
no, Donald Trump panders to butthurt Ohioans, promises to reverse mountain renaming. Yep.
Now, and you're looking at a real news site.
It's not CNN. Or something.
Okay.
It's on CNN.
There you go. So Trump weighs in again. So his main accomplishments were the Spanish-American War, raising protective tariffs to promote industry, and maintaining the nation on a gold standard.
So basically, that's why I'm an American citizen.
Mr.
McKinley.
And of course, he is also known for being assassinated and being replaced by Theodore Roosevelt.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Let me see. You know, that's good. So he was shot. Okay.
Yes.
I don't know. I guess.
Anyway.
There it is. There's Donald J. Trump on Twitter. President Obama wants to name a change Mount McKinley to Denali after Mark. Great insult to Ohio. I will change back.
There it is. Excellent.
Yep.
Okay, moving on. We have got a new surge.
Mike, who are we talking about now?
Ben Carson.
Ben Carson
in the latest polls in Iowa is tied with Donald Trump
for the lead. Carson.
Now, in the national poll.
All we need now is Herman Cain to come back so I can go say Cain. Get him back on the polls.
There you go. Now, if you look at the national polls, which, of course, you know, the nomination does not work with national polls. We do Iowa, we do New Hampshire, right. We do South Carolina. And, you know, so national polls aren't directly relevant to what will end up happening. So that's why we do look at the Iowa polls and we look at the New Hampshire polls. But national is relevant at this point to getting into debates. It's relevant to how funding is happening and, you know, if people are getting donations and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, we had noted that after the first debate, Trump had fallen a little bit. Guess what? He's back up. He's exceeded anything he's had before. His average is now up to 26.5% nationally, with Ben Carson at second at 12%. So we're having so much fun here. This is one of those things, and we're going to keep talking about Trump until he's not in the lead anymore. But everybody's starting to get tempted to say, okay, everything we've said about how there's no way Trump can do it, maybe he's got a shot.
Now he does.
No, and this is what I want to say. The fact that I'm starting to get tempted to say that, to me, indicates he's got to be near his peak.
That's exactly why.
You know,
that filing.
Because when everybody's like, oh my God, maybe Trump will actually win it. That's when it's, you know, reality will start to come back. Right? Right?
Yes.
Tell me I'm right.
That's usually the case. Yes. but the reality is that, look, I mean, it hasn't been just one poll. There's been a number of polls that have shown that his numbers are coming back down to earth.
Well, no,
and
again, you look at the poll averages, not individual polls. The poll averages had him coming down until about August 23rd, 24th, and since then he's been heading back up again. And also, one of the keys to this is, you know, a month or two ago when we were talking about this, one of the things we kept saying is, yeah, he's got 20%. But if you look at the internals of the polls and when you look at people are asked, would you ever vote for this man? There's like 75% of the Republican Party who says they'll never vote for Trump no matter
exactly
what.
Exactly my point.
But if you look at the updated versions of those polls, those numbers have been plummeting. The number of people who say they would never, ever vote for Trump has gone from 75% down to only like 30 or 40% now.
Okay, but here's the thing. Still, Iowa, for example, I'm looking at the latest polls, right?
Yes.
He is 23 to, look, the last three polls, 25 to 18, Trump ahead. Monmouth, 23-23 tie. Then the latest one, 23-18. Dude, his lead is, listen, with how many candidates are we talking about? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. 14 candidates getting over 1%. Come on. This is bullshit. It's bullshit, Sam. It's utter nonsense.
Well, like I've said before, what needs to start happening here? Well, one,
candidates to drop out.
Candidates have to start dropping out to consolidate all these people on the low end and start getting them behind somebody else other than Trump.
That's right.
Now, a bunch of polls have said that there's a significant number of people for whom Trump is a second choice too, but I think you need to start seeing these people drop out. The other thing is, you know, with Carson having his little spike in Iowa, you know, if Carson catches Trump in Iowa, then he'll start.
Right.
It's like, are we really going to have, it's just unbelievable to look at this. And again, looking at the national numbers, Trump number one, Carson number two, really?
Yes.
Really?
Right. This is bullshit. It's bullshit. Bullshit.
And, you know, I mentioned in a couple conversations with people offline that, you know, we've got this whole, we're going to start hitting the funny season where everybody starts talking about all the exciting possibilities that are low probability events, but would be just so awesome if they happened. So
now remember something. Yeah. Bush just raised over $100 million.
Yes.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, he has barely spent any of this money.
Right.
Okay. Right. Now, today, what I heard is that the Bush team is just unloading the whole fucking full bore on freaking Trump. Okay, yes, all right.
They have started an advertising campaign against Trump, and Trump has started to fire back with some of his own ads.
But the reality is that they've got so much more ammunition to fire than Trump has. Okay, all right. Look, and we've got, like we said, 6 months to go to this fucking first vote. I mean, I'm sorry. Those ads work. Okay? Those damn ads work.
One interesting thing that's a couple of pollsters have started to poll on that's interesting is there, you know, one of the attacks on Trump is, you know, he holds all these Democratic positions.
Right.
But then they've started to poll people on, like, you know, this traditionally Democratic position that Republicans typically hate. And then they tell people, Trump likes this. Now what do you think about it? And people are changing their minds and approving the Democratic position because Trump likes it.
Okay, so do you realize, right, that if that's the case, then they're just completely fucking themselves up Well, in the general election, right? Because if that's the case, right, then it's just sheer insanity. Okay? This is like, that is, if that's the case, this is, I mean, the Republicans just might as well just say, fuck it, we're out of 2016. The hell with it. It doesn't matter who the Democrats nominate. They're going to kill us.
Well, because things like, he's been in interviews within the last week, he's said things about taxes that are fairly Democratic and not very Republican, let's say.
Oh, my God. He said about raising taxes and shit and other stuff. And I was like, really? It's like, and then
they poll Republicans about it and say, you know, Donald Trump says such and such. Do you agree? And all of a sudden, you've got a lot of Republicans agreeing with this notion that traditionally has been something that Republicans rail against.
Okay.
And now, another effect of that, by the way, there was another poll that said it was on the position on the Iran deal. The poll said. They did two versions of this poll. One said Donald Trump has said that he would not repeal the Iran deal, but he would enforce it very strongly. Do you agree or disagree with this? And then they did another version of the poll, which said the exact same thing, but replaced Donald Trump's name with John Kerry, because they both made the exact same statement. On their position, both of their positions are, we want this to go forward.
John Kerry?
Yes. The Secretary of State?
Okay. Right. Okay.
Both of them have said, we don't want to stop this deal. We just want to enforce it very strongly.
Okay.
And so they replaced the name. And of course, the exact same position, if John Kerry says it, almost no Republicans support it. If Donald Trump says it, a significant majority of Republicans support it.
Basically, what you're saying is that the Republicans have no convictions whatsoever.
Well, no, I don't want to narrow this to Republicans, because I've seen similar polls of the general public at large, of Democrats, of whatever. There's an element of tribalism here where you determine whether or not you support a position based on who is saying they're for it and who is saying they're against it. So they've done polls on this related to Obama and stuff as well, where, you know, if you just say, you know, here are two policy positions, which do you support? You get one answer. But if you say Obama supports this, all of a sudden all the Democrats are for it and all the Republicans are against it.
That's lovely. So basically, I knew that most people don't have no convictions. Great. Beautiful.
But it's not necessarily that they don't have convictions.
They back people, not, yes. not they don't have exactly. They
it's,
back
it's,
people.
It's a tribalism ideas. Thing. It's backing your tribe. You're either it's part of the Republican stupid. Tribe or stupidity. The Democratic tribe.
Stupidity. It's like most people. Jeez. Okay.
Okay, so Carson, you know, we're going to have President Carson next, but I did want to mention, before we get off Trump, he's apparently having a press conference tomorrow. Obviously, we don't know what he's going to say. Do-do-do! This is Sam from the future. Well, when we recorded this, we didn't know what Donald Trump was going to say at his press conference. But between then and when I'm actually putting the show together to get it out, the press conference happened. So we know now he did indeed sign the Republican loyalty pledge saying he wouldn't run as a third party and all of that sort of stuff. In the next couple minutes, we talk a little bit about that possibility, and we also talk about a few other more colorful possibilities that unfortunately did not happen. Oh well, back to the show. Do-do-do! There is some speculation that he's going to say that...
He's gonna be the main contestant for the Miss Universe pageant himself. He's going to be in a swimsuit.
Well, one of the things that's been going on is apparently the Republican National Committee has been circulating a statement to candidates, asking candidates to sign basically a loyalty pledge saying they'll support the candidate no matter what. As we talked about last week, there's some states that are saying requiring that to get on the ballot. So there's some speculation that Trump will actually come out and sign a statement like that and say that he will support the nominee. But I want to reiterate what I said before. It doesn't matter what he says. He can say that now, and then there's nothing stopping him if he does not win the nomination.
Well, of course, because that's the secret Clinton plan.
Yes. But I mean, all he has to say is like, look, I was going to support the Republican nominee, but I've been treated unfairly and they're not doing this and they're not doing that. And so even though I intended to do that, now I think I have to do a third party run. And so there's, you know, he can say whatever he wants now. It's not really binding. It's not going to do a damn thing. And given Trump's reputation and Trump's approach to things, him changing his mind on it is not going to lose him a single damn supporter.
Right.
Or probably some, but not very many, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, if he feels that it is politically expedient for him right now to pledge that, he will. That doesn't mean a damn thing towards whether or not he would actually do it when the time comes next year or not. Or, of course, he could come out there and say, fuck you, I'm not signing any goddamn pledge. You know, or he could declare his third party run tomorrow, or he could rip off the mask and say, you're right, I'm a Democrat, I was hired by the Clintons, have fun, guys.
Wouldn't that be great if he declared a third party run tomorrow? That would be awesome.
Yes. Anyway, who the hell knows what he's going to say?
He's probably going to say something like he's probably going to insult somebody else. I don't know, maybe me.
Probably you. Well, yeah.
I'm a big, he sounds like a short, fat something, I don't know.
Well, yeah, sometime in the last 24 hours, he tweeted something telling George Bush to, like, you know, that he should speak English.
Oh, gosh, yeah, I know. I love that. They would probably say that to me sometime.
Or not too. George Bush. Jeb. Anyway, fun stuff there. But the final thing that I wanted to move towards, now that we mentioned the Trump press conference, that our listeners will know what was said, but we don't, is there is an additional development on the Hillary Clinton front. And this came up only in, you know, the last couple hours before we were recording this show. So there's a Washington Post story. A staffer who worked on Clinton's private email server faces subpoena that was published in the Washington Post September 2nd. And several paragraphs in, you know, they could have made this the headline, but they didn't. The person they're subpoenaing is
Some poor schlub.
It's a poor schlub. It's Brian Pagliano, who worked on Clinton's 2008 presidential campaign. But specifically, he's the guy who set up the server in her house in 2009. So he's like, you know, political tech guy, you know. So, but the bottom line is his lawyers, he's been subpoenaed by the committee investigating this stuff in Congress. And his lawyers have informed the committee that he intends to plead the fifth.
I don't understand why the guy doesn't even know what the fuck they're going to ask him, and he's already going to plead the fifth.
So, yeah, this brings up all kinds of
fun. I mean, this is like ridiculous. I mean, you want to talk about, I mean,
And of course, his statement is the Fifth Amendment protects innocent men who might otherwise be ensnared by ambiguous circumstances. So, of course, you know, the Fifth Amendment should not be construed as an admission of guilt. That's the whole point of the Fifth Amendment. However, come on, guys, you know how this looks.
It looks awful. It looks awful.
And like we've talked before about, we've got this.
Yeah, we've even got the questions. You're drip. Already fucking like taking the freaking fifth. I mean, it's like fucking like ridiculous.
We've got this constant drip of Hillary stuff. We also had the release of emails. This last batch of emails that were released, which while mostly innocuous.
Well, we'll probably at the rate we're going, we'll probably have President Biden if fucking Hillary keeps fucking this whole thing up.
No, well, yeah, look, this last batch of emails had a whole bunch of redacted stuff that has been retroactively determined to be classified. Now, right. According to the Clintons and stuff, nothing was classified at the time they sent it, but there was stuff that was sensitive enough, like apparently there was some talk about, like, the North Korea situation, there were talk of some other things which, like, come on, you should have known that this information is potentially classifiable. And so they clearly, like, and we've got another situation where Hillary Clinton tells some guy is being reluctant to mail something over email because there might be an issue with classification. And she's like, come on, just send it. And now, specifically, I think she had a good case. It was like something that was intended to be a public statement. So it's like, come on, it's a public statement. Just send it to me. But the at the same time, she had somebody who was like, I'm not sure I should send this over email. And she's like, fuck it, send it.
Well, yeah, but
you know. I know. But the point is that this all looks incredibly bad. Now we've got this guy.
And there were like people that obviously it keeps appearing. There were people that were actually concerned about the fact that she had her email address was not a freaking like department's .gov. And people like kept going, what the hell? Why am I sending this email address?
Yes. Yes. There was also a State Department IT person confused about the email address.
Right.
But now with this guy potentially pleading the fifth, it's like...
No, it's just, you know, make it bad into worse.
I mean, and this is what we've had this whole time. We've said time and time again, like when this first came up, I said, what we've seen so far is a big nothing. Like, there's not going to be a lot of people who change their mind because of this. Then we start finding out that there's potential issues with classified information. We start finding out there's issues with the security and how the stuff was handled. We've got Clinton making statements that just make it look worse and worse. Now we've got the goddamn IT guy who set it up pleading the fifth. Well, if you're pleading the fifth, what the hell are they hiding? It just looks worse and worse and worse and worse. And you know, she's still in a fairly strong position at this point, but it's a hell of a lot weaker than it was. And if this drip continues, I mean, you could see this blowing her up. You could see her completely and totally collapsing. Like you said, maybe we do get Biden in here because, you know, Biden's making his decision right now. He has to decide in the next few weeks if he's going to be in the next debate.
If Biden is running, I'm fucking voting for Biden. Well, I'm done with this whole
thing. Is a lot of people are saying that.
I'm done. I'm done with her bullshit. I'm done.
And if you're Biden, you got to be looking at this and saying, oh my God, one of her staff is pleading the fifth now. Ha 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 ha. You know, even if she hasn't collapsed yet, she's going to. You know.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, the odds. You know, we started out the year with the odds of Hillary Clinton being the nominee like at 90% or something.
Yeah, they're way, way down now.
I think we're down to like 60, 65, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
We're not below 50 yet.
We're not below 50.
We're not below 50 yet. But, oh my God. And I mean, and not only this, but she's shown herself to be such a weak candidate in all other contexts as well. She's, we've talked over and over again about how nobody's really excited about her, but then she's having trouble making the human connection and having people, you know, we got Bernie Sanders ahead of her in New Hampshire, which is a neighboring state and a very liberal state and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, she's showing more and more and more signs of weakness. And, you know, the thing we said at the very beginning of this is it's Hillary's to lose. But it's like she's doing every possible thing she can do to sabotage herself.
Don't sabotage yourself. I know. It's freaking ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
And you know, having said that, like I said, she's not below a 50% chance of winning. You know, she's still by far the front runner, even, you know, if Biden gets in, you know, but with all these chinks in the armor, she looks weak and like it's gotta be tempting for Biden. And you gotta think some other people might even be thinking about it at this point. I don't know.
Like I said,
it's getting late to jump in.
It's not that late. But it is getting late, but it's not late yet.
It's not too late.
It's not too late. But I tell you what, like I said, if Biden goes in, I'm voting Biden. Fuck it. I don't care.
Yeah, there you go. So I mentioned earlier just all the crazy scenarios, and I just want to outline a couple of the crazy scenarios that, you know, when junkies like me are always like, oh my God, wouldn't that be cool? But at the same time, it's like, okay, the chances are really low. So I'm not predicting any of these things. But we have fun things like, let's say Trump actually does win the nomination, and what and the rest of the Republican Party actually splits up over it, because, like, you know, Trump somehow gets the majority of delegates, but all these other guys are completely dissatisfied by it, and we start and we have Bush run as an independent or start his own party or something like that. You got interesting scenarios like that. You've got the brokered convention scenarios that we talk about every 4 years, but haven't happened in decades. We've got the scenario where you have Trump doesn't get the nomination but runs as a third party, and he's doing well enough to get electoral votes, and not just pull electoral votes from the Republican, but also pull a few from close Democratic states or something like that, so that we don't get a majority in the Electoral College and gets thrown to the House. Because everybody says Trump being in the race as a third party just kills the Republicans, and that's true as long as he can't get electoral votes. Once Trump starts getting electoral votes, you start getting the possibility that Clinton would get the most electoral votes but not a majority, in which case it would go to the House, and guess what? The House elects a Republican. You know, so...
No, he won't get any electoral votes. Look, the reality, Perot didn't get any electoral votes.
No, and of course, in polls at this stage in the race in that decade, he was ahead in some states.
Yes.
But in the end, he did get second in a few states.
But he did not get a single electoral vote. There's no way frickin' Trump is getting one electoral vote. I don't buy it.
I don't know. I could see some of the deep red states where...
No way. You're dreaming. No way.
Oh, man. Can't I dream?
Yeah, you're dreaming.
Can't I
dream? Yeah, you can dream. It's just, you know, just not going to get you much.
Okay, that's enough. We'll see how all this plays out as usual, but it's getting fun. It's getting fun. Chaos. Of course, with all of these prospects of chaos, we're going to end up with Clinton versus Bush and Clinton winning, and, you know, it's just...
Then it's just going to be boring.
None of the fun stuff is going to happen. It's going to be boring and play out as everybody thought it would years ago, which is one of the things you do see in these previous cycles. Is there's a lot of drama in the middle, but if you cut out the middle and only look at the very beginning and then how it actually turned up, it usually ends up how people thought it would.
Yes.
Anyway, let's take a break, and then it's lightning round time. Back after.
We're going to have a very, very short lightning round.
Okay. Lightning round after this.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's late.
There. I have a flight.
You have to be up at 3 in the morning or something.
Yes.
Yeah, whatever. Come on. Okay, we'll be back after this. Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now, there are 4 ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at I-M-B-O, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you. Okay, we are back. Let me get this started. Facebook hit 1 billion users in a single day. What do you think, Yvonne?
Facebook gets a lot of people. Now, here's the thing. It's got 1 billion users in a single day, while at the same time, Facebook is not in China, right?
I guess.
I believe. I'm pretty sure that's actually correct. Facebook is not in China.
Well, there's a difference between having a presence in China and having a Chinese version of their website and Chinese people using it. I don't know if it's completely blocked by the Great Firewall or not.
I do believe, and I remember that they had this map up a while back that
showed... It is not popular in China, that's for sure. There's other networks
there. Okay. The blockage, not banning, of the use of... It is blocked.
It is blocked. So only technically savvy people who know how to get around the Great Firewall and are willing to suffer the consequences of getting caught doing that would potentially be using Facebook.
Yes. Okay. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. 1 billion without China.
Yeah. Pretty damn fucking impressive.
I mean, what's the population of the planet now? 7 billion, something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So 1 out of 7 people on the planet logged into Facebook on a single day.
Right.
So they probably have more users than that overall that didn't happen to log in on that specific day.
That's right.
And, you know, I remember having many conversations about, you know, would Facebook last any more than these other social networks did before?
Well, we had like, what was it? Friendster and what was the other ones like? Oh, gosh.
Friendster and Orkut and MySpace and
Orkut. Oh, my God. I forgot about Orkut. Yes.
Yeah. And Google Plus.
Google Plus.
Let's not forget Google Plus.
Let's not forget Google Plus.
Anyway, the point, I still think eventually Facebook will decline, but it's obviously going to be around a while.
Facebook is definitely going to be around a while.
I mean, we're probably talking decades at this point. This is not something that's going to disappear
in
a year or
two. This is not like all the other ones that became a short-term phenomenon.
Once you have 1 in 7 people on the planet logging in, you know, even if you start a precipitous decline tomorrow, it takes a while to shed 1 billion people.
You do realize Orkut officially dissolved. When do you think that Orkut officially ceased to exist?
It was like last year sometime, I think.
You're right. September 30th, 2014.
Because I had an Orkut account. I remember the notification.
I actually did as well. And I remember that the one thing that was good
it was really
about
popular
Orkut,
in Brazil.
That's right. And remember that I spent so much time in Brazil that almost everybody that I had like connected was in Brazil. It was like really funny.
Anyway, Facebook, like it or not, it's going to be here a while.
It's going to be here a while. Yeah.
Okay, your turn.
Oh, God, my turn.
Or I'll just go.
The Iran treaty is likely not rejected.
Yep. We have enough Democratic senators saying they support it to override a veto.
Yep. So that's likely a done deal, right?
Yeah. I mean, now the only question is, are they going to try to push to actually be able to override a filibuster as well? It might be a tough push for them. I think it's better optics than just saying, okay, we've got the veto-proof majority. Now we're, as Alex gets dragged out of my room again. Anyway, to say, okay, we've got the veto-proof majority, we're done, sort of looks bad. They should at least try to, you know, be able to stop the filibuster as well. Make it so they can filibuster. But, I don't know if they will or not. It sounds like they're at this point, they're just going to make it a free vote and see what happens. Because now basically what happens, the path this takes is that Congress passes a disapproval of this agreement. The president vetoes. Then the Congress tries to override the veto and fails.
Fails.
So there we go.
That's it. It's all done.
Which I think is the right result. And yes. I think this is going to end up as one of the significant accomplishments of the Obama administration, along with healthcare, that he gets remembered for, is the opening up of the path towards, you know, we're not normalizing relations with Iran yet, but we're, this puts us back on the path to Iran being a citizen, a normal citizen of the world, as it were. And, yeah. You know, Israel's not happy about that. Saudi Arabia is not happy about that. The other Gulf states aren't happy about that.
Whatever. But yeah, anyway,
it's healthier for the whole world and the whole region for it to go this way. Okay.
Okay. So trivia question for you.
Yes.
When do you think that Friendster actually ceased services?
Did they cease? They're not still around?
They are not.
2014.
Close. They ceased services on June of 2015. Just only like 3 months ago.
So if you'd asked me a little bit earlier, I would have been right.
Yes. It said on June 14, 2015, Friendster citing the evolving landscape in our challenging industry and, I quote, lack of engagement by the online community, suspended their services. Jeez. Anyway, yes. So there you go. All right.
Okay.
So.
Next topic. I finished another book. It was an audio book again. This one time was The Scarlatti Inheritance by Robert Ludlum.
Okay.
So
and?
It is basically a spy novel from the 1970s about intrigue in the Nazi era. It was okay. I think it started out a little slow, but it was interesting. It was fun. It was one of the things is the main protagonist was like he was a forensic accountant.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, so it's not like a normal, like, hey, I'm a spy. Here's my gun. Here's my blah, blah, blah. Although he did some of that stuff. His thing was like, it all centered around like this guy stealing stocks from a company to try to fund the Nazis in the run up to World War II. And it's like, okay, it was an interesting read. I will read more by Robert Ludlum. This is the first I read, and I should read reading in quotes. This was an audiobook. It was fun enough. It kept my interest. It was by
his
no
books means, are, his books are all right. I mean, I'm like, you know, I've read a couple.
Yeah, it was by no means like high art or anything like that. It's not.
Right. It's not.
It's not something that I would be like, oh my God, I've got to read that again. That was so awesome. But it was entertaining for the time I listened to it. And I'll listen to more of his stuff or read more of his stuff. We'll see.
Interesting.
Okay, your turn.
Okay, I got another trivia thing about more another social, a social networking site.
Yes.
Do you think, is there a mobile application for MySpace?
I would say yes.
And the answer is yes, you're correct. And as a matter of fact, it was last updated on February 8th of 2014.
Oh, that
for iOS. Ago. And on May 22nd of 2014, I actually would have thought it wouldn't have been updated like even, you know, further back. But actually,
They've tried to rebrand themselves and do something with music and do some other stuff lately. Like, I just went to their website right now, and it's got current news from today on the homepage. So.
Yes. So, therefore, you know, there you go. So, MySpace apparently actually exists. Okay. All right. So, Kanye for president.
Oh, Kanye. Yes. Okay.
So Kanye West goes on some 13-minute MTV, which apparently the VMAs decided that controversy works, which they're right for that kind of a show. You know, so they put Miley Cyrus and a whole bunch of crazies up there. And, you know, they started yelling at each other or whatever. And for whatever the hell reason, I did not watch this. I'm just telling you from summaries, I did not even watch, like, I mean, if I've watched like 2 minutes of clips, that's like the maximum.
Right.
But so I was reading about it. And then apparently for 13 minutes, they let Kanye West speak nonstop for 13 minutes on an award show. And near the end of it, he declared that he is going to run for president in 2020.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't say what party, as far as I remember.
His party.
Oh, his party.
He didn't say anything, but I just assume it's his party.
It's his party? So he's not the Democratic nomination. He's just running for president.
Yeah, who knows?
He's a third party.
Well, I mean, he hasn't said, but I would assume that it would make the most sense for him to run as a third party.
You think?
Yeah.
I'm running for president now, so it doesn't. Yeah, so I don't know. So there we go. That's another consideration we got for the presidency. Kanye West,
yeah.
Another psycho. Great. We're just getting every lunatic, going up for it. Great.
Speaking of lunatics, and because I saw it on MySpace's homepage just now,
as I'm going through the social networking goodwill tour,
we got this whole like publicity thing about Kermit the Frog dumping Miss Piggy and having a new pig in his.
Oh life. My God! Yes, I know. Things like ridiculous. Yes.
I just have nothing to say. It's just like...
It's just ridiculous.
They're goddamn puppets.
Right. Yes.
And like the media is reporting on it as
if... Yes, on a regular basis.
As yep. if it was like a real like... I mean, even when they're reporting on the love lives of like actors, it's like, come on, does this really matter to anything? No. But no, they're reporting on the fictional love life of puppets.
Okay. So on another social networking site.
Yes.
Do you think GeoCities still exists?
No.
You're wrong. It still does. It's owned by Yahoo. Yahoo GeoCities.
I remember that.
But now, it's currently only available in Japan.
Okay. But because I remember a couple years ago, there was a big deal where GeoCities was deleting all of their old stuff. And then somebody actually made an archive of all of GeoCities. You can actually go and download a torrent of the entirety of GeoCities from how it existed right before they deleted everything. Like right now, if you just go to GeoCities, you end up at smallbusiness.yahoo.com.
But apparently they have a website for Japan only.
Okay.
There you go. It's geocities.co.jp.
That's exciting.
Yes. It still exists. There you go.
Okay.
And apparently, I clicked on it, and oh my God, all these characters. I can't read anything.
There you go. My next one.
There's a lady taking a picture. That's nice. That's all I can tell. Yeah.
There are a bunch of Apple rumors, but the actual announcement's going to be on September 9th. So rather than talk about the rumors, we'll talk about what actually comes out once it comes out. Yes. There's a new Google logo.
It's ugly. Can I be honest?
I kind of don't like it either, but at the same time, you know, as everybody points out, everybody dislikes change. You don't like it because it's new.
No. I disagree. There are changes that look.
Oh, by the way, I should mention, apparently one of the head designers on the new logo is someone that I used to interact with, not very often, but occasionally at my current company.
Oh, God. Well, you know, tell him that his new logo sucks. Can I be honest? The Apple logo got changed from the one with the little, like, colors into, like, the solid colored one. And I'm sorry, people didn't start saying, oh, my God, the Apple logo looks like shit.
Well, a lot of people didn't like that when they made that change.
Most people liked it. There are some people that didn't. This one, there is universal distaste. The Google change one, as far as I can tell.
I'm looking at it and I'm like, yeah, whatever.
It looks like shit. It really does. I don't know. It looks like something like a 4-year-old could have drawn.
Well, I mean,
it's pathetic.
It's just the word in a different font, basically.
I know. It looks stupid. I don't know. The old one was better.
Anyway, okay. You got another one before I do my next one?
No, go ahead.
Okay, we got this clerk in Kentucky who is still refusing to do gay marriages, despite...
She's going to go to jail which is going to be great.
There was the Supreme Court ruling, then she didn't do it anyway, then she went to court, she got several appeals court telling her, no, you got to do it. She went back to the Supreme Court saying...
And they basically said, no, we're not going to review it.
And then we've got even a number of like conservative Republicans at this point, including some of the presidential candidates, have said, you know, we live in a country that's the rule of law. If she can't do her job according to the rule of law,
she's got to go to jail.
Or resign. Or just resign the job.
Or just resign the job.
You
that's
know,
right.
And it's an elected position, so she can't be fired. She would have to be impeached to be removed from office. But the Kentucky legislature is not likely to do that. So, the next step is she's been being hauled in front of a court to basically justify why she shouldn't be held in contempt of court. If she's held in contempt of court, there can be fines, there can be jail time, there can be whatever. Bottom line, this is the last gasp of this stuff. Because what it's showing you is even conservative Republicans who said they defend traditional marriage and they think the Supreme Court is wrong, blah, 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 are like, look, it's the law. Do it.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, the will among conservatives to refight this battle is disappearing quickly. Like, you don't see a lot of the, at least so far, you know, you don't see like the Republican presidential candidates talking about this and saying how it's important that you elect me because I will put in somebody in the Supreme Court who will reverse this or anything like that, or the constitutional amendment. Some of them gave lip service to that kind of thing when this first came out, but they've been relatively quiet about it because realistically, they know they've lost this battle.
Right.
And this one last clerk holding out is just a sign of just how isolated she is at this point.
Yep.
Do, do, do. This is Sam from the future again. I spoke too soon. In the time since we recorded this, before I'm putting this episode out, a few things happened. First of all, I'd said a couple presidential candidates, Republican presidential candidates, were saying sort of just follow the law, just do it. However, there were a number of others who were taking the other side. Mike Huckabee, for instance, several others. The Republican field was actually split on those saying, you know, it's the law, just follow the law, and those saying, you know, she has a right to be a conscientious objector here, etc. But then, as I said, her name was Kim Davis, by the way, was going into court to face contempt of court charges. And the judge, in fact, did send her to jail. And then, you know, the conservative world, you know, lost their shit. At least a significant part of it. And so, you know, what I was saying here about, you know, them sort of letting this issue go and moving on. Yeah, no. I mean, some parts, perhaps, some individuals, perhaps, but there's a significant portion still that is now going absolutely nuts about this issue still and is bringing it up more, not less. And, you know, it's not going to be a winning issue for them. But there you go. Anyway, we'll see how it plays out. Back to our discussion. Do, do, do. Okay. So
do you remember
more social networks?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Do you remember High Five?
No, not at all.
No.
Never heard of it.
Shit. Oh come on! It was around. Okay. All right. So you don't remember how High Five? How about Classmates?
I do remember them.
Yes. Let me see. Are they still around? Let's see.
I think all they right. renamed.
Classmates.com. It was founded in 95. In 2010, Mark Olson described the transition of the website to increasingly focusing on nostalgic content.
Yep,
it doesn't say they're still there.
I just went to their website. There's something
they're still there. There you go. Okay, so that one's still there. Okay.
Here's one for you while you're doing this kind of stuff. I know one that was near and dear to your heart for a long time.
Oh, CompuServe. Boy. What? Oh! Are they still around? Is it still working?
Well, if you go to CompuServe.com, you get to you get
AOL.
Something.
You get something.
Well, yeah, you get something. It's like some sort of portal page, and there is a link to CompuServe mail. I don't know if it's the same.
Yeah. It's owned by AOL. AOL.
You hit the mail, and it goes to AOL. Yeah.
It's just AOL. Right.
But it's still, you know, you can log in to get your CompuServe mail. You, I can't believe you canceled your account, Yvonne.
I didn't want to pay for it anymore. Well, you kept paying for, like,
AOL. I kept AOL paying for AOL until, like, for years and for, years. For,
well, so apparently still do a lot of people, by the way, all right, to this point. Okay. Let's see. I'm looking through these. I don't recognize any of these. There's a whole bunch, like, there a list of, like, these, you know, of course, Orkut, we should talk about. Classmates, yeah, High Five. I you don't remember that one. Nope. Okay. I think I went through all the ones that were a thing. Okay. Let's see.
I got two more quick things. First of all, what's the market update? Is the market still crazy? What's going on?
Give me the 2 minute version. It's going up and down. They're all like freaked out. I don't know.
Did I hear correctly that Canada officially went into recession?
I did not see that in the news.
I think they had their second quarter negative or something like that.
That may be. I mean, Canada obviously would be severely impacted as well by the oil slump. So that I wouldn't be surprised by that at this point. You know, the country that really getting impacted more than Canada is, like, they were showing that Russia's economy contracted by like 7%. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, in the U.S., if the economy contracted like 7%, I mean, there would be like rioting in the streets. So I don't know how Putin keeps like all that thing contained. However, the other day they did show Putin on TV like working out together with
Mendeleev or whatever his name is.
Medvedev. And the great thing that I loved was the fact that he was working out all using U.S.-made equipment.
Oh, I didn't catch that. Okay, cool.
Oh, yeah, he was using hoist equipment, which is made out in San Diego, which I actually love the fact that Mr. Like, I am so anti-America, is like working out all with U.S.-made machines.
Well, it's freaking lovely. I take it there's not a well-known Russian brand of exercise
apparently
machine.
Apparently not. No, not really. I mean, you know, the man of the people, he's working out using, like, I would say, I looked at how many machines he had, because we're actually, I'm on my condo board, and we were trying to purchase one of those machines for our gym. He's probably working out with $70,000 worth of equipment, you know, like, sitting in his, like, private, like, little dacha or thing, whatever, you know.
There you go. Last thing to mention, Google has announced that next month, I believe, they're going to change their algorithm, their ranking algorithm, to penalize mobile sites who pop up these annoying interstitial ads that say, I know you clicked on the link to this article, but before you can see the article, how about you download our app?
I agree with Google. That's just really annoying.
Yeah, I saw an article basically saying that, you know, from there were a number of people quoted from various people who have apps like Yelp and some other folks saying how this is really a war on apps and Google is trying to like protect their legacy web stuff.
No,
blah blah blah.
No, it's just annoying that you click on there and you gotta go. They ask you to do an app. You can you have the option on the iPhone. It will show that if you're at the site, you can show at the top, oh, you know, hey, we have an app. Would you like to download it? Which that's okay. But if you put me on that damn page, that's just freaking annoying.
The worst ones are the ones where they take you to that page, and then when you dismiss it, you get to the site's homepage instead of whatever the hell you were clicking for.
Exactly. That's just ridiculous.
Those are absolutely ridiculous. But all of them, like, I don't care about the context at all. If I go to a piece of content, like I follow a link to an article specifically is what happens all the time for me, and I get served a page that you're hiding the content I actually went to for an ad, whether it be, you know, please download my app or an actual ad, then I'm gonna not want to go there. I'm gonna have a very negative opinion. Like, and you know, hell, if I want your damn app, I will find your damn app and I will download it. If I go to your site enough, but if I've seen an interesting link on social media for a specific article that you've published and I click through to it and I get anything other than that article when I click on it, I'm just going to be pissed.
And listen, I'm good with like doing like a Google search, for example, and say I come up with like a LinkedIn profile or something like that, right? And then at the top it tells me, hey, you know, look, you have the app installed, or how about opening the app, in there.
No problem with a little.
No problem
note, with a little.
I like that.
It's good. It's a little note somewhere is fine, especially if you actually have the app and even if it just automatically redirects you to the app. Okay,
that's fine.
But it's the things where they block the whole damn page. The other thing that's annoying are the ones that have the little X to dismiss it that's almost impossible to dismiss.
Oh, my God, yes. Just amen. Actually, Google is totally right. I'm with them 100% on that. They're totally fucking right.
And
their logo, their new logo sucks. That, they're good. That I'm voting for.
And yes, they need to do it with desktop sites, too. I forget one site, what site it was. There was some website. It was one of these damn financial-oriented magazines. You probably read the damn thing. Somebody I knew said, you know, you're reading too many liberal sources. You got to read this one, too, to get you a more conservative perspective to balance things out. I'm like, okay. I added it to my RSS feed, and every once in a while, I'd see an interesting article, and I'd click on the article, and there'd be a full-page ad instead of the article itself.
I know which one you're talking about. With the Financial Times.
Oh, no, it actually wasn't the Financial Times. It was a different one. But with a 30-second timer or something before I could click through to the damn article.
Oh, I know. It's Forbes.
Forbes.
Oh, my God. Yes, Forbes. Every single link does that. You go to an ad, and then now I will say this. You can click through the ad and get through it.
There's a little bit of delay or something before you can get the click through. I have ad blockers installed, so I never actually see the damn ads. I just see a blank page that says click here to continue.
I know, but it's very irritating. Forbes, all the Forbes articles and the links are just extremely irritating. They're so annoying.
And so eventually, and nothing to do with the content itself and the quality of the articles, I unsubscribed to it. I removed it from my RSS reader. I'm like, I'm not going to click on that.
I know. I actually agree. I actually avoid like clicking on Forbes links because of that. It's extremely annoying. I totally agree with you on that. It's just freaking annoying the shit out of me.
Well, and I've actually stopped clicking on articles that you share sometimes from the Wall Street Journal for the same reason, because they're all paywalled. So I get to the page and I can read like the first sentence, and then it's like, you know, click to subscribe. And I'm like, I'm not even going to bother anymore.
Yeah, I know.
And there are tricks that you can get it anyway in certain ways. But I don't want to bother. You know, if you make it hard for me to read your stuff, I'm not going to read it.
Yeah, I hear you.
Anyway, we're done. Thank you for joining us yet again for Curmudgeon's Corner, as I stumble over my words. Yeah, that. We appreciate all of you listeners. Follow us on Facebook if you don't already. Leave comments there. Tell us what you think. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll talk to you again next time. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Later, Yvonne.
Bye.
Go to sleep.
Yeah.